and welcome to the Afro Reads podcast with your hosts,
Amara
and Ugochi.
Afro Reads is a book review podcast that was created out of our shared love for reading African fiction books.
We talk through its themes and try to tie its key messages to our African heritage, culture, and contemporary issues.
We invite you to turn the page and let's begin.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to episode 16 of the Afro Reads podcast. My name is Ugochi, and I'm joined by my co-host,
Amara. Hi.
Hi there. It's been a long time we've gotten together, but we're excited to talk about a bit about this book that we've been reading called The Old Drift by Namwali Serpell. But first, we want to catch up a bit, right? So, and talk about some interesting things going on in Africa, some current events. Let's get into it. So the first one I want to catch up on is about this handsome Senegalese president.
handsome indeed, yes.
He's been newly elected, I think this month? Well, I don't know.
This year.
And so what we think is interesting about him, and keep in mind, I don't know anything about Senegalese politics, so I'm just saying that he's handsome based off of what I've seen, but I know nothing about the election process or what he represents. But what we thought was interesting was that he goes around with his two wives, which is a bit unconventional for, I guess, us in the West to see. And we thought it was interesting because he's embracing that he does have two wives, and it's a common practice for individuals in that area of the world to have multiple wives, polygamy.
Yeah, and what's interesting as well is that his wives have profiles. Like, now it's a country with two first ladies, and the two first ladies have profiles and probably gonna have like an office created for them, and people have started, obviously probably intentionally, like comparing them against each other, almost like Meghan and Kate, and just saying one is more traditional, one is more fashionista, one is more Christian, it's just crazy. But yeah, as you say, like, it's that boldness to embrace African culture in a way that has never been done, because I've never heard of any other state openly having, obviously you hear of the mistresses, but two first ladies.
Recognizing them as first ladies.
Yeah,
that's amazing. I think it's nice.
And don't forget, he's like 44, which is rare, like, in African politics of late. Like, obviously in the 60s you had Gowon that was like 29, or Buhari that was 30 something. But it's crazy, like, usually we have grandpas running for seats. And now it's a 44-year-old, which is even more interesting. Obviously we pray, like, you know, the power doesn't consume him and he's there till he's 100, but it's nice, it's refreshing.
Yeah, a fresh voice, fresh views.
Yeah.
So we hope the best for Senegal.
And for his polyamorous situation.
I hope that it allows other African countries, I guess, to be more bold in embracing their culture.
Well, speaking of which, like, obviously the next story we were discussing was Bob Risky. So he's this transgender, well, we thought he was transgender too recently, but he's trans anyway, and he's, like, you know, engulfed the social media Nigerian space for the past 10 years because he's quite eccentric. Came up as, like, this poor Nigerian boy, and now he's a fully developed woman, you know, changed the color of his skin, and he's very stylish and, you know, a fashionista, really. I remember something, well, I know this is going to come late, but something that's been going around is this meme called Esther was black and broke. Now Esther Blish, do you know it?
No, I don't.
Oh God, Ugochi.
I'm so behind.
You're behind.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they show a before picture of someone being black mm-hmm. and poor, not poor looking, but just, you know, when like, it's like even an old camera just makes everything just grainy and weird.
Yeah, yeah.
So they show you and they say Esther was black and broke, and then they now show like an epic aftermath picture of you being fair, yellow, or you having some kind, showing some kind of wealth to show like your transformation.
Mm-hmm.
So they say Esther was black and broke. Then when Esther see money, Esther bleach. So it's a play on word with establish.
Establish. Okay, I've seen or, something or about
Esther bleach. Mm-hmm. Esther bleached. Mm-hmm. Right. Which is very, anyway, that's Bobrisky is like the epitome of that, is the epitome of that meme anyway. But yeah, back to it. So basically why he's on our news trend is that he's been arrested for 6 months. Yes, like his court case was expedited and everything for spraying the Nigerian notes mm-hmm. at a party, like lavishly and without care.
Which, by the way, everybody does.
Everybody freaking does. Like, it's not even a thing. And yeah, he just got caught. And I think what's very interesting to Nigerians is how speedy the case was. First of all, the amount of security and amount of soldiers that, you know, were brought on to the case to arrest him and to ensure that, you know, he went to court and all that. Just the resources that went into that process. Mm-hmm. And it's like, if you really want to do something in Nigeria, if you want to get things done, we can actually can.
Yeah, we can.
Yeah, so in literally less than 2 weeks, he was arrested, sentenced, and is now in jail in Ikoyi, even if some people said he's been transferred to Kirikiri. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But what was also interesting is that in court, he identified as a man, because they asked him in court, sorry, sir, which prison should we put you, female or male? He said male. So everyone has been like making fun of the fact that all the posing he was doing, that he actually transformed to a female,
mm-hmm.
was a lie. Mm-hmm. So he's actually a transvestite, not mm-hmm. a transgender.
Interesting.
So yeah, he's serving his sentence in jail. Obviously, I think the connotation is that they were, because of his lavish kind of in your face lifestyle, everybody wanted him in jail, so, or to like be punished somehow, because it is a 14-year sentence to be gay or display acts of homosexuality in that manner in Nigeria.
Really?
So yeah, it's a 14-year. You didn't know that?
No, I didn't know it's 14 years.
14 years. So, and you know, I'm very much liberal, like do what you love, who you want to love, but I guess it's that question of, you knew you were breaking the law and you were still lavish about it. But I don't think everybody's saying, obviously the Nigerian government will not come out to say we arrested you because you were gay, because that would have international
consequences
perhaps. So they've just tied the fact that he was spraying too much money. Everyone also, some people also say that he's actually connected to like a string of more sinister crimes, like actually trafficking, human trafficking.
Really?
Small boys, yes, to politicians all throughout Africa. Like a syndicate, yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. But I don't know. The point is that he was arrested for this crime. EFCC was involved, which is weird. And
what's EFCC?
Oh, sorry. Economic and Financial Crimes Commission. So it's like the corruption agency in Nigeria.
Interesting.
Yeah.
It'd be nice to see the court documents to see what exactly they're charging him for.
Yeah.
14 years. If they're going to say, oh, we're charging you because you're spraying money and you get 14 years.
No. Not like 14 years now. 6 months.
He's in jail for six months. Okay, got it.
But being a homosexual, like displaying homosexual acts in Nigeria attracts 14 years.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously they're not going to arrest him for that.
Yeah.
So they've arrested him for a lesser crime. Yeah. And just try to tell him to shut the hell up and go to jail. Let's have peace of mind.
Interesting.
But yeah.
But spraying money is not a crime.
It is.
It is?
Yeah, 6 months.
How is it a crime when it's part of our culture?
I think for the past 5 or 6 years, they've always said it's devaluing or it's defacing the naira. So so you should stop doing it. And there was like an early crackdown on people doing it, but I think after COVID everyone just went wild.
Wow.
So there's actually a law there.
Mm-hmm.
He just happened to get caught in a trap, mm-hmm. unfortunately. Yeah.
Okay. Interesting.
But he's going to be out and about, and I'm sure he has greater things coming for him. As if we won't hear a word, there'll probably be a homecoming party.
Someone's going to throw him something and spray more money. Yeah. I don't think he's going to change after he comes out.
He can't now. He's there probably writing content to press our necks with. Of course not. Okay, what was the other story?
The next one is Tunde Onakoya. I think he's... No, Yoruba.
Yeah, he's Yoruba.
So he recently, this month actually, April, he broke the world chess marathon record in New York. He played chess for over 60 consecutive hours.
Yep.
So I thought that was amazing and wanted to share that here.
Yeah, shout out to Tunde Onakoya. Yeah. To believe he's just in his 20s as well. I had been following him on LinkedIn. So this is not a new phenomenon. And, you know, him like just being like, you know, that role model to society.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen a lot of his works in the slums. Well, through pictures, not mm-hmm. real. Yeah. Through a lot of pictures and him just giving back to society and also raising awareness about the need for children in the slums to be, you know, more engaged, mm-hmm. to keep out of trouble. I think that's his mission and vision. So this, winning the Guinness Book of Records, even if Nigerians, we love a good record, record, but, you know, not slamming anybody, and we can't carry last. But yeah, so this will really shine light. He was trying to raise like $1 million, but mm-hmm. I'm sure by the end of this year he would surpass that.
Definitely.
Because of the endorsements and just, you know, shining light on his work, which he's built over the years. So as I said, this is not just, it didn't just happen today.
Yeah, a lot went into it. He's been doing a lot for a long time.
Yes. So kudos to him.
Yeah, congratulations. And shout out,
in case he ever hears this podcast.
All right. So next, let me just do a quick summary of the old drift, and then we can get into some topics to discuss. So the old drift weaves together the story of three families, the indigenous, the colonial, and the immigrant across generations, offering a panoramic view of Zambian history. The narrative begins with the arrival of the British colonizers in the 19th century and follows the lives of their descendants as well as those of indigenous Zambians and immigrants from various backgrounds. The main characters include Sabia, a young Italian woman whose hair grows uncontrollably and who moved with her husband to Zambia in suspicious circumstances to set up the Kariba Dam along Victoria Falls. She represents the immigrant that moved to Zambia. Matha is a Zambian girl with big dreams who had supernatural intelligence but was later inhabited by her autoimmune disease, which caused her to uncontrollably cry. And then finally there's Agnes. As the story unfolds, we see how these families deal with issues like identity, race, and the impact of colonialism. There's also some magic mixed in, like mysterious powers and strange events. As the story unfolds, we see how these families deal with issues like identity, race, the impact of colonialism, and Afrofuturism, along with science, research, and technology in Africa. All right, so let's go into some of the topics from this book.
Yeah, and just to say, like, this book took us about 6 months to read. It was over 600 pages. I happened to read mine on Audible, which is fantastic. The narrator was really, really good, especially, you know, getting the impression, the accents of all the characters.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, very long book. Yep. But I'm happy we got through it and we're here today.
Yeah. Okay, so let me go through, let's talk about this first one. What themes stood out to you the most in this book, and how did Namwali Sirpel explore them throughout the book? Do you want to go first, or...
I want to go first. I'm not a deep reader like that, so I don't think I'm going to do like a deep theme, because I just read for the hell of it. But what she really does well, I thought, was just showing that there's no happily ever after. Everyone has a very trying moment, and it could end well or it couldn't. And it whatever it leaves, it passes on to the next generation to carry on that mantle of whatever legacy. So it was interesting, like, the three main characters had a burden to carry for all through their lives, whether it was crying uncontrollably or, you know, growing your hair or being blind, you know, all very suspicious circumstances, that those kind of problems that literally happens to you at 4 a.m. in the morning without any warning, and they had to carry that burden throughout their lives. And then passing on to, and then the characters, all nine of them, so we have the three main characters, their children and their grandchildren, none of them had a happy ending.
No, not really. Well, not really. Or what's happy, like, what's defined as happy? So
no, you know, in the book, as like Martha, let me give you an example. I'm sure I'm going to talk about this in the other. Martha was intelligent. I rooted for this girl so much. What happened to her in the end? She ended up crying uncontrollably for some stupid guy.
Mm-hmm.
Passed it on to her child, where she showed no love. The child ended up getting AIDS. And then passed it on to the other child, Jacob, who, well, I guess he lived to be an old man, but there's nothing interesting. Okay, he built the micro drones, but the micro drones was then used to, like, almost destroy the country.
Happy ending. Could you say Martha had a happy ending?
That's what I'm saying. She didn't.
But she, at the end, she got together with her people. I don't know what they're called, but she had like a group of revolutionaries. So
what? No,
I'm not saying it's a happy ending, but she was always a revolutionary type of person, right? But after Godfrey left her, then yeah, she started the crying, and she cried for how many years? Yeah. All those years. And then her daughter passed away, and yeah, she stopped crying. And then yeah, she was able to go into her revolutionary group and do, like, go yeah, on stage and do. No, so no, is that a happy right, ending for her?
You're right. Who is the happiness for?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, if she ended up... But she sounded insane in that rally. But I guess to us, she sounded insane. Mm-hmm. While to her, she was like, I found my tribe yeah, again. So
almost freed.
Almost free, exactly. So I guess you can't look at it that way. But yeah, it's just everything just kept coming around. I won't say full circle, but just a lot of troughs and high points. There yeah, was no linear path.
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't predict what could happen. And yeah, I think the author did that quite well.
Yeah. And I guess to piggyback off of what you were saying, I think at the end, the monologue or the mosquitoes,
mm-hmm,
that final word where how I interpret it is that they describe there's a line or a path for us in life that's maybe in the beginning a line, but the experiences that we accumulate take us off of that path.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we might get to the end of the line, but we're not going to get there in a linear way.
Yeah. So yeah, I remember.
Yeah. So that's, I guess, the theme that I picked up. Like, it's kind of same. Oh, saying it's what you're saying. Same. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So what's the other question?
Next one is, the characters in the Old Drift are complex and multidimensional. So which character do you find most compelling and why? I'll take this one first. Mm-hmm. I find Agnes, I think, the most compelling.
Really?
I think maybe because I might identify with her.
What?
Which is kind of just thinking about it recently. So Agnes was partially blind when she was first introduced in the book and then became fully blind. She could have been, because she was playing tennis
yeah,
back in England. Yeah, so she's from England, and she's a descendant of Percy.
Yeah.
Who I guess was the first character in the book. He came over from England to, I guess, establish settlements near Victoria Falls. So Agnes fell in love with a Zambian, and that Zambian came over to England to go to school, and that's where they met. And then Agnes moved back to Zambia with him.
Yeah.
So Agnes, being blind, I think she was just, she kind of kept to herself. She didn't, she wasn't really aware fully of what was going on around her. I mean, she had an idea, but she wasn't, I guess, engulfed in the culture, maybe in what was going on. She was interested in revolutionary things. I can't remember.
Yeah, she was like part of a communist university group.
Yeah.
Which is ironic, given that her father was a colonialist.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. So it's, I see her as someone who, I guess, walked her own path, despite what her family maybe brought her up to do, or despite what her husband wanted her to do.
Mm-hmm.
She's just kind of a rebel in her own way. But she, and then despite being blind, I felt like she still felt things or saw things clearer than a lot of the people around her. And it could be because she's maybe introspective, I don't know. But that's the feeling that I got.
No, actually, like, because I've been pondering this question since then, I was like, I don't want to say Martha, because Martha just spent her good light years crying, so I'm not going to give this award to her. I think Agnes as well, especially, again, coming from a colonialist background, obviously you can argue that maybe what humbled her was the fact that she turned blind, you know?
Yeah.
And she just had to just arrange herself in life, but you know, she came into Africa, made it her own. She kind of reminds me of my grandma in many ways. So yeah, because my grandma is originally Trinidadian, but came to Nigeria and kind of embraced the culture, and just it was now part of them. They never thought about going anywhere else. This was their home. But at the same time, when you look at it, there are certain aspects where they seem a bit removed.
Yes.
My grandma's case was, she just never learned Igbo, never bothered with it. And yeah, but she could cook the soups and do every other thing. Every other thing was just part of her. But there are just certain things I'm just like, you should try, Isha. But and the same thing with Agnes, you know, I felt sometimes she was a bit, she gave the impression that, I don't know, she was a bit ignorant, but at the same time, like, she was very, she held her own really well. Maybe it was not her being ignorant, maybe it's just what she thought, and that's that, like, it's more of a personality thing than maybe the fact she was ignorant, because she stood in the rallies for independence and like all the movements and things that were going on. She stood, she was there, she didn't have to be.
Yeah, she didn't have to.
And she tried to raise her son to be as, you know, to know his Zambian roots as much as possible, even the fact she was like half whatever. So she tried, she did a good job, and raised her grandson as well.
Yeah.
Even in the midst of her husband, you know, trying to be more white than her. So yeah, they give a certain impression, but maybe it's just less of, you know, them being non-knowledgeable and them just being resilient. So they'll take some things, they won't take something.
Exactly. Yeah. I take that as, she isn't, not that she doesn't care, but she can't be bothered with certain things. Yes. So she just doesn't deal.
Yeah.
And then one of the best, I guess one thing that stands out to me with her is she named her son after a lover, or I don't know if they were actually, I think it's someone who she admired, not a lover, someone who she admired. And she did this in spite of her husband, because her husband was always traveling, rarely around during that time, so she was upset.
Yeah. And I like it that in the whole book, like, everyone's like, why did you name your child Lionel? Why? And she never explained. Not really.
Mm-hmm.
Just said, okay, someone I knew in my past. Mm-hmm. I named, or did I miss it?
No. Someone I knew in my past. Yeah, sorry. I said Joseph, not Joseph. Lionel. Yeah.
Lionel. Like, she never bothered. It was just like, yeah, that's what I did. Okay, cool.
Yeah. And that was that. So that's one thing I like. That's what, yeah, I like about her. She doesn't care. She's present enough.
Yeah.
But doesn't overstretch herself to care.
Overstretch. That's, yeah. That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. So, shall we go on to the next one?
Yeah.
So the novel tackles various societal issues, including colonialism, gender, and technology. How effectively does Serpell address these themes, and what messages do you think she's conveying? That's a long one. Societal issues, colonialism, gender, and technology. How does she address these things?
The gender part, like, you know, the fact that all... like, the three main characters are all women, and they kind of, through their own actions, kind of, like, defined what was going on for the next generation, and mm-hmm. even the next generation, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that was strong. The male all the male characters were sort of, by the way, there was no strong main male character.
Except for Lionel, maybe, but not...
Lionel was used as a kind of collateral, just to tell the wider story.
Yeah, it was carried by women, this book, for sure.
Okay, I mean, you have Joseph and Jacob.
Yeah. So yeah, I guess towards the end you have Joseph and Jacob, but
But Nyla still... Nyla still... did what she wants, had intercourse with both of them again, surpassing their role, mm-hmm. and now gave birth to a boy that we don't know who the father is. So it's that same, the women just seem to obviously come out stronger.
Yeah. And is it because they're faced with more challenges, so they have to overcome them? Is that why they're a bit louder to us as we're reading? Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, whereas the men, they're there, but they don't really have to go through much to get in whatever positions that they're in.
Sibylla was the bastard child, but I'm sure, you know, the fact she was a woman might have played into that as well, like a girl child.
Mm-hmm.
And then also her looks.
Yeah.
And the fact she was hairy.
Yeah.
Might have played into that. Then she gave birth to Izzy.
Mm-hmm.
Izzy, there was no real
challenge with her, because she married a rich man.
Mm-hmm.
Had what, three kids or four kids? Four kids, I think.
Yeah, four girls. Was like an entrepreneurial person. So I don't think, so this is a good point. So I don't think gender should be isolated, like when you're looking at the review of this, it should be gender and also like social class.
Because
mm-hmm. Izzy already started from a good point in life. If you compare her to Sylvia, yes, Sylvia was her contemporary, right?
Mm-hmm.
Izzy came from a rich home, obviously rich immigrants that built the Kariba Dam. She came from a rich home, married a rich man, and even I think she was unemployed for quite a number of years till she started to do the hair thing.
Yeah.
And she was comfortable already. Yeah. So it wasn't just her being female and, you know, going through all the fertility issues. But the fact she was white basically kind of helped.
Yes.
Maybe not white, but just being in a higher society or higher class.
Yeah.
Than her contemporary... Sylvia, who, you know, from the beginning was just behind. And so these are the same women, but Sylvia started off being like a Zambian indigenous person.
Mm-hmm.
And so her trajectory in life was totally different. Now compare that to Agnes.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that she was white, she married a black guy who was also quite white, really. they gave birth to a son who became a doctor.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Her husband was educated.
Educated, exactly.
Yeah.
So it's not in this book is that I don't yeah, the author is saying, yeah, this is not a gender thing. This is like a mix
yeah.
of other factors. The technology thing is interesting as well because the stories were just funny. I was telling you earlier that the author is very good at like taking history and like facts and then just adding a bit of science fiction, and when you yeah, mix mystery. It together, it just makes it so funny. Like I didn't even know the space mission in Zambia was real, but I was reading it on Wikipedia and it's a real thing. Like
yeah, because when you're reading it in the book, you're just like, what?
Yeah, there was an colossal man that really thought he was going to get to the moon with an oil drum.
Yeah.
And
or he's
with
and
two
he's...
cats and a 17-year-old Afronaut. Yeah, it's real. Look it up. But it's these are the things that, yeah, it's very comical, but I think it should be taught in schools, you
definitely
know?
The fact that he tried and got the attention of the West to
got
come
the attention. I mean, a lot of people say that it was like an undercover for a lot of like the liberalist movements and other freedom fighter movements, but even just the science of like it would be interesting to even study his brain.
Yeah.
And
I think that's when we'll know if he was real or if
or
this
not.
Was yeah.
He convinced the whole legion of astronauts. Obviously at the end I think they all kind of abandoned ship, but convinced them. You could see pictures online of them training and there was like a due date of when they were to fly off, and obviously he gave the excuse that, you know, there was infighting amongst the astronauts and people were getting pregnant for people, and he just didn't have enough funding. What I also find interesting about this technology piece, okay, so apart from the astronaut, obviously we saw the beads, we saw the micro drones that were being developed by Jacob, but what I found really interesting at each step, the author kept saying, but we don't have money, but we don't have funding. The astronaut thing happened. Joseph's research was shut down because I think either the Chinese people cheated them or something, but there was some funding issue as well.
Mm-hmm.
The micro drones, okay, it was sold off to the president of the country, so that's fine. But there was another one where, again, it was I've mentioned it, the virus thing was about lack of funding. So I don't know if like the author is trying to say we actually have the same brains to do these things, we have the research, but because of our colonial past, the way the country is structured, corruption, I shouldn't even just say colonial past,
corruption
and everything, we're just not, we only progress to, there's like there's a glass ceiling,
yeah,
and we're not able to move forward. And I think the frustration becomes almost comical because we're not able to move forward, so I don't know.
Yeah, I get what you're saying.
Do you understand?
Yeah. It's like, why try, kind of, well, I don't know. Someone comes up with a great idea, right?
Yeah.
And you know that idea might work, but people, this is in my head, mm-hmm. people will laugh at that yeah. good idea because they don't see it coming into fruition because that's just not what happens there.
That's not what happens, and I don't have the funding to go further.
Yeah.
Right, and then so it's in this weird state where it's sort of happened on a very micro level, but we don't know how to scale, and then it just dies.
Mm-hmm. Which is really sad because I see that in Nigeria. Like I just see the way people think about certain things. If mm-hmm. you have an idea, how some people might look at you when you're saying that idea, because they come from a place where they don't see those type of things mm-hmm. coming into fruition.
Meanwhile, you know, indigenous technology is always the best because
yeah,
you're at the heart of what's going on. You know the traditions, the history, the everything.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting that when the micro drones was finally like launched and they were using it for mass vaccines. It was an idea of the West, almost like we, like in the book, they exported the idea and it came back in its own form through the beads and the mass vaccination.
That's a good point.
Do you understand? Yeah. Like, you know the way they say we export oil, but it comes back as petrol?
Yes.
That's
a really good point.
But yeah, we are just... There's just this glass ceiling in terms of technology. And we can't go past it without selling our souls.
Mm-hmm.
And then people reselling it as something different and more expensive. And yeah, the use of people like Sylvia as patient zero. So she traveled around the world, but she still died in a very weird way.
Yeah.
Probably wasn't getting paid as well. So very westernized, but I don't know. There's a lot to explore there.
What like three things do you think need to change before we can break that glass ceiling with our experiments or what we want to achieve?
Somebody should just colonize us. So, what I just think we need visionaries, and we need to support visionaries. You know, these things take time.
Mm-hmm.
For you to actually do research and technology, for it to progress to a level where it's scalable and it works, it takes a lot of time and a lot of years.
Mentorship.
Mm-hmm. It takes, you know, the right, unfortunately, the grooming, really.
Yeah.
From secondary school, university, you know, training a generation, or training like a sample of a generation to think differently.
Yeah.
And then having that continuity, no matter the situation in the country or the change of hands in terms of government, having that continuity to grow and groom
mm-hmm.
this sample to a point where, you know, they're throughout the country as scientists and doing their experiments and seeing how things get on and getting funded consistently. But the problem, which I've always said, is this 4-year term democracy thing.
Yes.
I mean, the solution is not to have like a president sleep there till he's like 90, but yeah, this 4-year thing and this polarized party state, I've always said, is very dodge for Africa, and you know, it's not what we need right now.
Mm-hmm. Especially since there are many ethnic, like for Nigeria, for example, exactly. You have so many ethnic groups. How can you have one president for 4 years and then another change to something else? It just, there has to be a more sustainable way to govern a country like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was an interesting mix, and it was definitely, when I even the astronaut thing, when I read about it in the book, I was proud.
Yeah.
Even if it was silly, it got me thinking, is this real?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Even if obviously it wasn't, but like, I was proud. I like, this is so nice and different to think that, like, you know, people thought this way, and then you moved on to the beads and people using the beads thing. But there was just a lot of innovation with Jacob and Joseph, you know, trying desperately to find solutions, but having this glass ceiling. And so to me, I was proud. It's nice to read.
Yeah, and it also made me think, like, as Joseph and even his dad was working on the vaccine for the AIDS virus, how many of these vaccines that we have in present day have been created by someone who we don't know, who someone else has taken the credit for?
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm sure many.
Oh, before we go on to the last point, it mm-hmm. also made me think of, you know, because Nyla was trying to help support, she did the SOTP movement, Jacob was developing micro drones, Joseph was doing the vaccine stuff. So my auntie used to tell me one time that she was a bit like disappointed with our generation, because in the 70s and the 60s, they like were fighting constantly. It was the feminist movement, it was the black movement, it was the immigrant, like they were out in the streets, they were camping, they were, you know, going all wild and bohemian, whereas here we're just given everything and spoon fed, and she just feels that there's almost not that energy to fight for anything anymore. Obviously, you then have the 2020 NSAS movement, which was like very prominent in the Nigerian in terms of the youth space. But so this book was good as well to show that, you know, there are people fighting. Like, three individuals really thought it was a good idea to blow up the Kariba Dam because of what they believed in. Obviously, it was a bit impossible, but again,
ambitious,
ambitious, but also carrying, say, you know, putting your money where your mouth is, yeah, was nice to read as well.
Yeah,
sorry, long, but let's carry.
They were fearless, which is kind of what's missing in a lot of our generation at the moment. Okay, so what do you think the significance of the title The Old Drift is in relation to the overarching themes of the novel?
I don't know.
The Old Drift. So, as I mentioned earlier about us having a line from birth, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
But our experiences kind of drift us away from that path.
Yeah.
That's what the title reminds me of.
Just one thing, like, yeah, and I totally agree with what you said, but it's interesting. Percy, in the beginning, you know, he came with an ambition, even, you know, to copy Livingstone, Dr. Livingstone, and even Dr. Livingstone came with a mission and vision. And it's crazy, they just died of malaria each, and their experiences were definitely not what is expected. Percy, I know, was moving from place to place, and he never really became that established settler that he wanted to be. And his wife died, his dog died, and then he died of malaria. So that old drift kind of sense started with him. It's never really what you pan out to be.
Side note, with them dying of malaria, and the mosquito theme in the book.
Oh, yeah. Do you know?
I didn't know.
See, guys, it's just Ugochi that pointed it out. I did not know the narrator was a mosquito. Did not. I just thought, because if you read it on Audible, it's like a black man with a really nice tone that reads the mosquito part.
Yeah.
So I never used to actually listen to it. But yeah, I always used to wonder why he was making like mosquito sound before he started talking. Oh, he was a mosquito. Got it.
To be fair, I didn't know until the end where they were talking about, are we a swarm or something like that.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, this makes sense. After we know how Joseph made his mosquito thing. Yeah. I don't know what to call it. Yeah.
Well, it's interesting how mosquitoes were deadly in the beginning.
Yeah.
With Livingstone and Percy and the white settlers, and at the end it was also deadly,
yes,
with it now being made in form of a micro drone.
Yeah.
And it's also interesting that in the middle of the book, with Joseph trying to use the mosquito to kind of come up with solutions of the drones, but it ended up being used for mass vaccination, which is so mosquitoes are basically the enemy.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay. So Serpell's prose style is often described as lyrical and poetic. How did her writing style impact your immersion in the story?
Yeah, I don't know that one.
Well, okay, so I think she has a lovely writing style. I loved her writing style. She's very descriptive. Sometimes I wouldn't call it over describing, but she set a picture and she might repeat things in different ways, setting the scene up for you. So I loved it.
I'm not one to really comment on writing styles because I just don't know the different ones. But all I can say is that she did the book in such a way that I was always intrigued about the next chapter. I don't think I was ever bored. It was very long, a long book, but I never said, okay, I'm bored, you know. The only thing in the end, it was just a disappointment the way it ended. You even pointed out that it didn't even end in a full stop.
Yeah, the last sentence doesn't have a period. Like, it's not a completed sentence.
That's amazing.
So, I mean,
what do you think that means?
I think I get the sense that she really wants us throughout the book to kind of just use our imagination.
Well, that's actually the last question. Oh. So just read the last question and then let's answer.
Okay. So the ending of the novel is open to interpretation. What are your thoughts on the conclusion and how did it affect your overall perception of the book? Yeah, so the conclusion, I mean, this is apart from that. The mosquito part was the last part. That mm-hmm. was a full, mm-hmm. you know, but the end of the book, yeah, it didn't end with a complete sentence. I didn't like it because it kind of ended as you think they're dying. You think that they're drowning. Mm-hmm. This is Joseph, Nyla, and Jacob.
Yeah.
So you think that they're drowning because they've damaged the dam. The water mm-hmm. is flowing and the boat's damaged and everything. Mm-hmm. So you don't know what happens to them after that. And that's it. So I didn't like it because I don't know.
I think we're not asking for like an ever after. I think the way they've stupidly gone after the dam, just three of them, we don't actually mind if they died and it was very explicit that they died. What the author did was kind of say, yeah, they didn't die. Mm-hmm. They died, they lived normal lives, and Nyla died in childbirth and the two other boys kind of just grew up and everything was normal. So it was, you're kind of leaving us testing for like what happened.
Yeah, and the mosquitoes are the ones saying that Nyla died in childbirth and Joseph and Jacob lived older. You know what I'm thinking now is the beginning of the book was very descriptive. Mm-hmm. The stories were more fuller, mm-hmm. like the grandmothers and the mothers. A bit less full, but it's still, you know, story is still there. And then it kind of gets to the children. And as someone else pointed out, that it just went really fast during the children part. So maybe it didn't conclude because it was going so fast and it just dropped off.
Yeah, because the popular opinion online is that we just understood the grandmothers, a little bit mothers, but the children, it just went on a different tangent.
Yeah.
Purposefully, it seemed.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, maybe that's life. Because think about how slowly things went, like voting rights, blah, blah, blah. It took 400 years slavery for them to abolish it. And then the voting rights took another 100 years, maybe your grandmother's time. And then my mom's time, you know, with all the feminism movements of the 70s, civil rights, civil movement took another 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then our generation, we've experienced financial crisis, wars, flipping from a boom box to iPhones and iPods. Mm-hmm. Like, in our lifetime, we've had to grapple with quite a lot.
Yeah.
And we're not even 40.
We're not even 40. Technology is like really fast.
Yes, yes.
Everything is just coming at us fast and we have to adapt fast.
Yes, also. Yeah.
So maybe that's why. I can see that now. I'm not as upset.
But it's so mundane that the child of childbirth. Childbirth takes you back to like the 50s maybe that's what they mean by full circle. Old men. So they didn't die by just disappearing in space, which is where, you know, not completing the sentence was heading to, like, our generation, technology. They just died as old men and childbirth. Like, taking you back to the beginning of just...
Maybe to tell you that they are human. That, you know, and the
circle of life.
Yeah. Kind
of, it doesn't surpass, or it... The generations don't surpass that circle of life.
Yes.
I don't know.
Yeah. Despite like everything that might come your way in life, all your experiences, you're still human. Yeah.
Yeah, this book was a tough one for me to analyze, so I hope you did it some justice, but I think we've come to the end of the question. So what's the next part?
A favorite quote. I have so many quotes here, but I'll just read one.
Yeah, read one
and hoping that I can remember what it means. Okay. Her teeth are like graveyard stone expanding in gum. Okay, so the author is describing, I don't know whose teeth she's describing, I've forgotten, but this is paying attention to her description and the way that she describes things. Her teeth are like graveyard stone expanding in gum. So to me, that just gives like a very vivid picture of what this person's teeth might look like. She's probably old. Yeah, so it's not necessarily a favorite quote, but I guess I'm picking it out just to describe.
Her description.
Yeah, but I have so many here, which I can post online later on our Instagram.
No, read one more.
Okay. Ronald sometimes had the impression that he saw eyes in her skin.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. So I say maybe this is good because it describes his fondness of her without saying it directly. And the author uses descriptions of body parts to illustrate that fondness.
Yeah.
So just an example of her literary style that I think is really unique.
Okay.
Yeah, so that comes to the end of our podcast.
Is that the end?
Yeah.
Okay.
Our next book, we're going to Botswana. Woohoo! And we're going to be reading Precious and Grace by Alexander McCall Smith.
Yeah.
So thank you guys for listening.
Thank you.
I hope this was beneficial, and I hope that you guys go and read the book. It is a good book, I think. It is a good book. It's worth reading. I can't promise that you'll like it because it's very
dense.